Welcome to the Canvas of the Soul podcast with your host, Anissa Patman. Enjoy the show.
Is your host, Anissa Patman, continuing with our Embrace You series. That's Embrace and the letter U series, where we are discussing important issues that impact the soul. Today, I am so excited to have a very special guest, the one and the only Najee Badu. Hello, Najee.
Hi, yes, I think I am the one and only. I don't know anyone else with that name.
Well, even if there is, it's just only one you, so.
Oh, you're so sweet. Okay.
And thank you for being a guest on the show.
I'm honored, I should say, to be a part of your show. I know that you have a lot of great ideas to kind of help support and uplift women. So I'm excited about sharing and let's get into it.
Awesome. And for those that are listening, Najee is the founder and creator of The Rise. And I'm going to let her talk about that in a minute. She's also an artist and an author. And what she enjoys most is helping other creatives around the world. So, Najee, can you tell us a little bit about The Rise?
Okay, so The Rise has had a couple of iterations. I think when we first got together to start the organization, it was definitely centered around the uplift of creatives, especially African-American creatives or Black creatives, however you identify, so that we could utilize our talents and our gifts to inspire or be philanthropic in our endeavors and not just, you know, utilize our gifts just for ourselves, but to kind of be of service to other people. But then George Floyd happened, and then all of this social unrest, everything that we know as an African-American Black community came to the surface at a higher level. So it ascended. What we are dealing with now in the world in terms of white supremacy, racism, those types of things. And so now the focus is more utilizing creativity to uplift the Black community.
Awesome.
In ways, you know, where it's enlivening, empowering, and informative in areas of finance, business, leadership, personal development, voting, politics, social injustice, all of those types of things that are very crucial to the uplift of our community.
That's wonderful. And I know that you, that you're an artist.
I am.
As well. And I've seen some of your paintings, which are beautiful, by the way.
Thank you so much.
When did you first know that you were an artist?
So here's the thing, and I think every artist probably of any kind, every creative, I guess, unless you're like a savant of some sort, but, you know, you kind of evolve into it, and you don't really claim your artistry until well later in your life. So I started drawing when I was young. You know, what's interesting too is I have a twin sister and she was actually a phenomenal drawer, whereas I was more focused on coloring. I loved coloring books. I loved color. I loved the way lines came together to create a picture. So that's what always fascinated me. And I think at some point in high school, I began to try to draw things on my own. And I actually was better at it than I thought I would. And so, you know, throughout my adult life, I thought it was just a hobby. And I think it wasn't until maybe in my late 30s that I actually claimed to be an artist, to understand that I had a gift to conceptualize thoughts that were inside of me and pick pictures that conveyed it or actually provoked different conversations that based on interpretation.
Wow. Wow. How has art helped you?
Art actually is a healing. So I wouldn't say that I had a traumatic childhood in a sense that so many other people that I'm learning have had traumatic experiences. But I will say that there are certain traumas that I did have. And out of, the way your parents get along, you know, sometimes as a sensitive being, kind of can be traumatic as an individual. So I'll just leave it at that. But I think art was an outlet. I think when I was little, when things would be going on inside my household that I didn't understand or that my sensitivities could not handle, I would take a box of crayons, a box of pens, a box of pencils, my books, and just isolate myself and just draw. I think it's like meditation.
Yeah.
So it's the same way for me now, even today, where if I have stress levels, and sometimes when I have stress levels, I can't create because now I'm creating my own pictures. But it's like meditation. It allows me to be in a zone and at one with God.
Yeah, I can understand that. I know when I was little, I used to kind of, I guess what you said, different things that happen in the household or just different things that happened throughout life, especially like death, when I started to encounter that a lot at a young age. I used to go and just write like little poems to myself. I still have those poems. I'm not an artist, but but it always has helped for me to write down how I'm feeling on paper.
I think for me too, I think what most people consider an empath, where I'm highly sensitive, and a lot, I keep this to myself. This is something I haven't really talked to you about. But I'm a very spiritual, energetic sensitivities.
Right.
So a lot of the things that go on in the world that I cannot control, but that make me sad or have some sort of emotional impact on me, I convey it in my artwork.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, like, yeah. I used to do that when I was a kid, and my little poetry, just because of how I felt, or I used to write my diary until my mom read it. Invasion of privacy.
Yeah, that's one thing I never experienced. I was not a diary or journal person until later in life. But yeah, I've heard some traumatic experiences where people read, the parents read.
Right.
How was that?
It was just, you know, because it was just my feelings of how I was feeling about stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe things that she didn't want to address, like pertaining like to my father. But I still felt that even as a kid, she had no right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But probably my fault, because I forgot to lock that, you know, to lock it or whatever. But
still, it's prying. But I think, though, to all parents, especially mothers, I mean, I think that's the way that they do find out about what's going on with their children. So, I mean, I know it feels like a violation, but in some sense, it was her way of trying to figure out what's going on with you.
That's true. I will say that I have snooped.
That was going to be my next one.
But I will say that when I snooped, I didn't say anything, but I saw where my daughter, when she lost her grandmother, my husband's mom, that, you know, they were very close. Mm-hmm. And I know it impacted her a lot, but just, she's an artist herself, but just to see her at that young age and to and her writing and how she was expressing herself and the vocabulary she was using, it was just amazing to me. But, you know, I was just like, okay, at least she's on the right path and she's writing it down. So, you know, it wasn't anything for me to really discuss with her. And plus, I know she would be upset with me reading her, her personal
but
journal.
But I mean, I think still, imagine if there was that.
Right.
You just happen to be kind of lucky. You know, in terms of, some people discover that their child is transgender and haven't really expressed it, don't know how to express it, dealing with depression. Like, there's just so much. So,
right. No, you're so right. I would just say, for those parents that are listening, and if you do snoop, which I'm not saying you don't have the right to do, if it is something that you feel like you need to address, you definitely should. But just make sure you keep the door of communication open and not come from a perspective of yelling or judging.
Yeah, because that's really a way for them to communicate in ways that they don't know how to another human being, especially their parents. So
right.
Find that, like, if you find something like that, my thing is, like, treat it as if the person or your daughter or your son is talking to you versus you're finding out a secret.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. And then I wanted to also, I know you had mentioned it briefly to me, and I appreciate you being vulnerable, you know, to those that are listening. I know you had mentioned in just conversation that, you know, it maybe at one point in your life you were suicidal or felt suicidal. Uh-huh. And for those that may be experiencing that feeling today, can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Sure. If I can take you back, though, I need to first say that I don't know if you heard me mention a few minutes ago, like I didn't, sometimes you're not aware you're an empath, or so you take on certain energies or certain emotions that are not necessarily your own, true, on top of your own. And sometimes, I know for me, because love has always been my highest expression in ways that most people I know, in my circles, they don't understand. And so there's a lot of times in my life that I have felt like the way that we subscribe to Christianity and things like that, where we try to live as at the highest form and the highest possibility that we can achieve as a human being, we fall short of that, right? But I think that there are times where I have been hurt really, really bad, but I try to really live in a way that's like, okay, be empathetic or compassionate towards that other individual, but it seemed that that type of compassion was not coming my way. Now, fast forward to me being in my mid-40s, mm-hmm. it compounded, right?
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that were happening in my life at that particular time that kind of catapulted me into a descension.
Okay.
And so.
Take your time.
Yeah, I think what happened, I was going through a breakup. I was really missing my family because we were estranged. I felt very, very alone. And these are no feelings that are unique to me. But again, I was tired of being misunderstood, tired of feeling like I'm the individual that's very, very kind to people, but can be very disregarded, dismissed, unheard, no sense of belonging, those types of things, all of those not unique to me.
With valid
but I
feelings,
really got
so.
To a point where it started to feel like the way that I wanted to live, the way that we are taught to live through spirituality, was too difficult to live here on this earth.
Wow.
There's just things that are, the worldly ways, the materialism, the achievement, the striving, the constant needing to be accepted. And it got to be too much, and this achievement thing, striving for success can be very daunting if you're not carrying it
properly, right?
Yeah. And so you're comparing what your effort level is, or I was comparing what my effort level is to be a kind human being and to be a successful person, or to utilize my gifts and talents in the way that God has ordained me to, trying to do that, but living in this world, it just seemed like there was never any alignment. It just seems like people like who are very sensitive to that were constantly being hurt. And I no longer had the capacity to hold myself up anymore. And so I thought the better thing to do would be to leave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And to go back to God, pretty much, to return to the natural state that I was trying to live here,
Right.
And so I actually, I was on this like a spiral for about 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, obviously my life events led up to that, but in this particular period of my life, it was probably I just couldn't anymore. And so I really started calling my friends and saying goodbye, or that this is what's going on with me. I really, really do love you, but like, I can't stay. This is too hard. Like, I'm trying to live at the highest, but it's just like the world won't let me. And, so I needed to go. I ended up going to get psychiatric help, some medication, which is the first time in my life I've ever had to do that. I've usually been able to manage my emotions and through meditation or through affirmations or through spiritual study, all of that stuff. And it just was not working. So, I don't know what happened. Because I definitely was thinking of ways to jump, you know, jump from my balcony, jump from a rooftop, you know, drive off a cliff or razor blade. Like, all of those things were constantly on my mind.
Wow.
And I was always crying, crying all the time. Until I went to go get help, and I don't know, slowly but surely, I don't know if it was some distractions in life, but I started looking up and things started to feel better slowly but surely. But I will say this, if you don't mind me saying, Anissa, I think, no. And I wrote a piece on this that's in my next book, which is a short story, I mean, an anthology of short stories and essays, that down there, I think we should pay attention to what depression is and what we can get out of it. Yeah. And what I mean by that is I actually found myself, and that's how Najee Badu was birthed, that part of me that is suppressed, you know, right, or oppressed and repressed, I found. And I think what depression really is that we're not allowing the truest aspects of ourselves to kind of be fully lived. And sometimes we can't because the way that the world is created.
Right. But the important thing is that you did seek help.
Yeah.
And that you recognized that you needed it and that you did actually, you know, reach out to someone to get that help.
People say to talk. Like, I'm a talker. I don't know. Like, I talk about anything. I don't really have anything to hide. That was an embarrassing phase, though. It took me a while to talk about that. But in terms of going to talk to somebody, I've been to therapists many times and whatever. But I think admitting that this is something I cannot, you know, I needed something else, such as medication.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I went through a depression, too, as well. Yeah, in my, you know, back in my early 20s, when I first got my first divorce from my, you know, my college sweetheart, and which was, I mean, really wasn't any fault of his own. I mean, we were just young, but, you know, I started to feel like alone and isolated and felt really depressed and down and didn't really talk to anybody about it. I would go home and to my apartment, and I would just sit there and just cry, just like you. And then I loved dogs, so I went and got a dog, and I think I started to depress the dog too, because you know, you get depressed, you know, because dogs, they love you unconditionally.
And they're like, I'm supposed to be making you happy. It ain't working.
Yeah, I know, right? And then I would play the same song over and over. And it was so funny because he would, when that song would end, he'd pop his head up and his ears would pop up like, oh, it's over. And then I'd play it again. And then when I started to play the song again, he'll go, and just lay down. So, but
what's the song?
It was some love song. I think it was by Mint Condition. Pretty Brown Eyes or something.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it was just a love song because then, of course, you know, my love life was crappy. I had decided to move out and move on, and probably wasn't something that I really truly wanted at the time, but I thought I did, and then just felt like I didn't really have anybody to talk to or relate to. And so, I mean, I would go to work, come home, and then someone at work one day said, "You look so sad all the time." And then my boss put me into this speech class because I like public speaking. And I was like, oh my God, really? This is the time she's going to, I'm like, okay. And then when we had to like present and stuff, I just found myself using it as an outlet. I told all them strangers my problems through a speech. And then I felt better. I did seek out help from a doctor. And then he tried to prescribe me some medicine. I took it once, and I was like, this just makes me sleepy. That is not going to help me. So then I just threw it in trash, and I tried to keep praying, and just, you know, eventually it got better. But I think, like you said, the most important thing to do is to, you know, is to seek help. And I think that's awesome that you did that. I think it's, I appreciate you sharing that with others, because I think that's the problem sometimes. Sometimes we all put on a facade, or we just try to hide all of our problems and what we're going through, because we have all those different emotions where we feel embarrassed, or, you know, or why am I feeling this way? I know I used to feel, well, I should be grateful I'm alive. There's always other people who have worse, you know, issues or problems than what I'm experiencing. But I think at the end of the day, regardless if someone may have a more traumatic experience, you know, all of our feelings are valid. And I think that for anyone that's listening, you should not discount how you're feeling.
Right. And I think another thing, too, is once you're comfortable, because I didn't take the medication for very long either. I think I might have taken it for 2 weeks. But at least I think it put me on a path of knowing that I was empowered enough to get out of this. And like you, writing really helped. But I think, too, when I began to have the courage to speak up, I mean, because some people knew. But one of the things that the therapist recommended is that I speak my truth to people and tell them either how they contribute greatly to my life, how much they mean to me, and that me feeling alone, that I need it. Like, sometimes we're afraid to say that we need somebody or we need, you know. And so in doing that, or even addressing the things that hurt as in my relationships, that was recommended. And so as I began to liberate myself, I had this experience where I found out so many other people had been there.
I know, it's amazing how you just hold stuff to yourself, right? Because you think I'm the only one experiencing it, or no one understands how I'm feeling. And then you start to really open up and talk to people. You find that some have had, you know, similar, you know, issues, and it's just... It kind of makes you feel better because you're like, I'm not alone.
Well, it makes you, no, I don't know about better. I mean, but I get what you're saying. I think it's more of you're not such this.
You're not on an island by yourself.
That experience. It's a lived experience that many other people are having. So you feel like, okay, well, it's not just unique to me.
Right. You're not on an island by yourself.
Yes.
Although you feel that way sometimes.
Yes, a lot of times, actually.
I know, right?
Yeah. I don't know why we feel so alone all the time, but I think what it is, I think what I'm learning in my spiritual practice now, Anissa, is that that sense of aloneness or that sense of not belonging, all of that's real. But I think it's because we're so used to conditioned happiness.
Yeah.
Conditioned, meaning external happiness that's contingent upon external conditions.
I think what we should
use depression, like depression should be a way to point us back to ourselves, but we miss the mark all the time. And that's why we're depressed.
And I think sometimes too, it's how you deal with depression has a lot to do with how you were raised.
Tell me more.
And what I mean by that is the fact that, you know, I know I grew up around a bunch of strong Black women, entrepreneurs, and they, you know, and, you know, like my great grandmother, she was born in 1917, an aunt that was, you know, very special in my life. She was, you know, born around that same time era, but they were very strong. And a lot of times, you know, if I would cry, they would tell you, stop that. Don't let people see you cry. You know, stop that. That's a sign of weakness. And so then I kind of learned from a young age to hold stuff in. Even now, like now, I recognize now, like, I love to help people, but when I need help, I keep it inside. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I think it has a lot to do just with not wanting to show or appear that I'm weak, which is something I got to get over, you know?
Can I speak to a couple of points?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I think there's a couple, you hit it right on that. Even if it's not spoken or verbally communicated that this means if you do this, then you're weak. Just like, you know, hypermasculinity, boys don't cry, like all of that stuff.
Right.
Because even if you're not, it's not being spoken to you, the things that we learn how to cope by watching our parents too, right?
Right.
So I think that we should all be understanding as parents or as people who have young ones in our, is that people are always watching. The kids are always watching. And if you want them to be healthy, and that's not to say that you're perfect at all. Like, just understand that the children are watching. And I think that looking back in hindsight, parents and children are looking, are discovering that some things impacted them in a positive way, and a lot of things impacted them in a negative way. And I think you and I have spoken about this on our podcast, like our parents are growing also.
Yes.
They don't always have the tools to be exemplary in terms of how to cope. But I just think that if we were all just more mindful of how we are affecting other people around us, then that would be kind of helpful as well.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with you. All right, Najee, we're going to take a quick pause for like 30 seconds for a sponsor break, and I'll be right back with you.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Najee. You still there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was awesome. A quick 30 seconds.
But awesome, awesome, awesome. We have had some great conversation this morning. We're going to continue that. I want to talk a little bit about your book, which is Let Go of Your Butt.
Right.
And I know that this was inspired by a dear friend of yours. I think you said her name was Kimberly Harp. In the book.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Kimberly, how she inspired you to write this book?
Okay. This is a deep one. She's my angel now, or one of them, I should say. So hopefully I do her justice. Kimberly and I were very, very close. She was one of the first friends that I had when I came to Atlanta. So she and her family embraced me. But one of the challenges Kimberly had was having dreams and not feeling as though she were equipped, had the capacity, or had the means to follow them. And she was an awesome photographer. In fact, she did a lot of camera work for a lot of the events that were happening around Atlanta. And so a lot of times our conversations throughout our friendship, she was like, I'm not happy in my marriage. I'm so unhappy. He's this, he doesn't do this, and I need this. And then the kids, she had three young boys at the time. And she's an avid Christian. And the only reason why I say that, there's no knock against Christianity. I study it too. What I'm saying is, there are certain beliefs that she subscribed to that said if you were divorced, you know, there would be a certain perception that she couldn't handle. And so she stayed in an extremely unhappy marriage, unfulfilled, where she carried most of the weight. You know, she got one of those kind of marriages where you feel like a single parent.
Right.
You know, so it was one of those types of things. Plus, you know, the other stuff that they were going through in terms of their relationship. But anyhow, she came to me one day and said that she actually was going to apply, for a divorce, which to her was a celebratory thing. I mean, that's not to say it was something to celebrate the ending of a marriage, but in terms of her liberation as a woman. About 2 or 3 weeks after she made that announcement, she started having pains in her stomach. And so, you know, we were like, her friends, you need to go get that checked out. You know, all the while she's like, as soon as I get a divorce, I'm going to make sure that I start my business, this photography thing. I'm going to take care of my boys. I'm just going to find it. So she had this plan. 2 weeks later, she found out she had pancreatic cancer. And one of the things that I didn't understand in terms of, because it was a 6 month, in 8 months after that diagnosis, she was gone. But the thing that was very interesting about her getting that diagnosis is that Kimberly was a very vibrant, very social, very happy individual in spite of what she was going through in her home. So it was very odd an experience. To me, to accept and or watch the day that she got her diagnosis is actually the day that she died. not her physical transition 8 months later. And what I mean by that is she was like, oh, I have to do this because the doctor said this. But pretty much she gave up on life. She only left the house to go to her chemo sessions and doctor's appointments. She stopped going outside. She never left the room. And it's like she just gave up. And so I watched a woman who had forfeited her life to raising her children and her family, which, you know, we should do, but forfeiting them to her own dreams. And so watching that happen was both a blessing and a very painful experience, because I knew she never got to live her dreams.
Right.
A lot of times it was just excuses that could have been overcome, but she didn't have the mindset, and not even when she was diagnosed. And it's interesting too, because I had another friend who was diagnosed with breast cancer, and they approached their illness in a completely different way. The other one was very vibrant with the mindset of, I'm going to beat this, I'm going to live, I'm going to do this. And that's something Kim didn't have. And 8 months later, she was gone. Whereas the other friend that I had is actually still living and thriving.
Wow.
So I wanted to write the book. And first of all, I did some self-reflection on where my own life, and we still do. There's like many times where we suppress the things that are meant to come through us purposefully or even in a divine manner. So I started to do some reflection and seeing where in my own life I was putting off my dreams and aspirations for the sake of other people or for the sake of a condition, limitations that are placed upon me by, you know, the way that I was raised or the way what people said was possible for me or not possible for me. And I think that the my book, Let Go of Your Butt, A Woman's Guide to Self-Love and Fulfillment, one of the things that I have learned in all of my study, and as well as conversations with women, is that we lack self-love. And the reason for that is because we are taught that loving ourselves is a selfish stance to make in our lives. We are oftentimes giving so much to other people, our children, our families, our jobs, and very little is given back to ourselves. And so one of the things that I started to just meditate on is that if we cultivate self-love, then we can actually exist from a state of overflow, and then we can still follow our dreams and aspirations, but still take care of our families. And you know what I mean?
Right.
We just have a hard time at putting ourselves first, but we need to understand that if we put ourselves first, then we have plenty to give to everyone else. But we don't know that. We're not raised that way. We are raised to put everybody else first.
That is so true. That's so true. I also, when I was, also reading your book, I mean, there's a part in there where you have, I think it's called a stage of self-actualization. Mm-hmm. And you have these different levels in there. I think like openness and gratitude, true perspective gain. But I think the one that popped out to me, I think it's level 3, which is a release of negativity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit about that piece of it?
Sure, I think that's timely because in my spiritual study today, it talked about surrender, right? There are lots of things that happen in our lives that we cannot control, but we think that we can, right? Or we try to suppress or repress the experience or the feelings and the emotions that are derived from said experiences. And so, what that is recognizing your feelings, right? We have a scale of feelings. You know, they can be on the spectrum of positive or on the spectrum of negative. Oftentimes, the negative emotions that we're holding on to are the ones that are holding us back. And they prevent us from moving and living our lives in a full capacity. Because we then make our choices and our decisions based on avoiding negative energies or avoiding negative experience or things that will cause us pain, all of which is either occurring in the past, has occurred in the past, or will occur in the future, but not happening in the now, right? So letting go of negativity, there's work around experiences that we've had in our life and understanding that they are just actual events and that the negativity that we are experiencing is by choice, right? Yeah. Because we can always look beyond the negative experience of the negative feelings of an experience and see a lesson or see where things may have been, a better choice may have been able to been made. And so that's pretty much what I'm saying there.
Okay. Now, I just think it's important for, I think we're so surrounded by negativity, not just by individuals that you encounter, but I mean, just look around the world today, what's
everywhere.
Happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Everywhere. We're conditioned to see the negativity. And right. I think what I try to encourage people to do is like, there's two options. There's love and fear, right?
Right.
Which negativity is usually founded on fear. And there is actually nothing, there's either love or there's the absence of love. Right. So yep. Whenever we're experiencing negativity, then we have to recognize that we're not seeing the brighter side of something. We're choosing to see. And that's whether it's we're allowing people in our lives who have negative deficit in terms of coping skills. They're not managing their emotions, they're not managing their thoughts and things like that. So it impacts your life. Well, then you have the right to say, I won't allow this in my life. But sometimes we don't empower ourselves that way. We don't empower ourselves with the choice to eliminate or minimize the negative energies that come into our lives by way of people, circumstances, or environments.
I agree. I definitely agree. I also just love the title of your book because it always it reminds me of, I think I've heard you stop me in saying it sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to do this, yeah. But, I started this, but.
Yeah. I mean, I say it too. So we all do, but it's just being mindful, mindful that sometimes we are the only ones that are in our way.
Yep. That's so true.
Yeah.
I would encourage everyone, if you don't have this book, to purchase this book. And Ajay, can you tell the listeners where to purchase it?
You can either go to The Rhyze, that's The Rhyze, RHYZE.com, and then visit the gift shop. It's there. Or you can search for that book on Amazon. And it's Let Go of Your Butt, A Woman's Guide to Self-Love and Fulfillment.
Awesome. Again, I encourage everyone to purchase the book. I purchased it. I've read it.
You did. Thank you so much for your support.
And I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to just touch on a couple more things.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about just when you and I do podcasts together, we talk about so many different subject matters. Mm-hmm. But I think the two things that kind of stood out to me that we've talked about, just different obstacles that we encounter when we're trying to, achieve our dreams or pursue our dreams. And I know sometimes those obstacles that we encounter are from other women.
Tell me more. Meaning the lack of support?
Lack of support.
Crab is in a barrel, that type of thing?
Yes. Okay. Trying to pull you down or, like you said, just not being supportive. But you can see them being supportive to others and maybe other people of, not of color.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Can you tell me some of your experiences with that and, how that made you feel and how you got through it?
So yes. So I don't know if this will answer your question, but I'll do my best.
Sure.
One of the things that I do know is that when you're living your dreams, and it looks good, people assume you don't need help, right?
Right.
And it's, it's packaged well. You come and you're serious about what you're trying to create or what you're trying to build. But I think what I experience is I'm super anal, super project management oriented, and so very, very detailed. And I think what I experience is when I go to people and ask for help or their assistance or their feedback or even their support, I don't feel like I get it. And the excuse usually is it's not going to come from your friends. It's not going to come from your family. Or the other thing is that people are intimidated or that they're jealous. And wow, these are beliefs that I don't subscribe to because if you're especially a Black woman, but if you're a woman or if you're anyone with a dream and aspiration and there's any way that I can help, I'm made from the cloth where I will do what I can. We are supposed to be here of service to the people. Our lives are not our own. We are to lend our talents and our gifts to other people so that they can thrive and rise. But I find that most people are not made that way from that cloth. I think that a lot of times there's jealousy that comes in the way, intimidation, and the lack of support, usually is, it comes as a result of something that's so minor.
But I think
it's because we are designed to give of ourselves so much so that when people are doing the things that we wish that we could do, so to say, it hurts us and it reflects, it shows up as a failure on our parts. And so that I think people turn their backs on trying to help other people because they feel like they're unhelped or unsupported.
As opposed to if someone has a talent,
yes,
and you don't, but you know you're trying to achieve something, but you could utilize that person. Mm-hmm. I just feel like if we could all work together.
It's
funny because yesterday my husband and I were talking, and then I was also talking to a gentleman I work with, and he's Latino. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I told him, I said, one thing I really love about the Latino culture
is that they band together
and they help each other. And a prime example is that we're under renovations at my house, and the contractor that did our floor and stuff, he's also going to be doing the painting. But yesterday we had the people deliver like our appliances, right? And so it just so happened that while they were here delivering the appliances, the other contractor came. But they all know each other. They're all Latino. They're all in the Latino community. And they band together to help build each other's homes and things like that. And then it was so weird because once they knew the appliance delivery guys, once they saw the gentleman that did our house and stuff, they were like all relaxed. We were all laughing and stuff about things, but they all come together and they help, and then they don't mind. I found helping, you know, others as well too. And I just think it's so bad that as women, whether we're women of color or just women in general, that we need to do better with that. We need to learn not to be jealous of each other and to exercise each other's talents, but you have to be open. People have to be open.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to be open.
I want to speak to a point real quickly. And I don't know if it's necessarily a Black community issue versus a Black woman issue or just a woman issue, but I can speak to this point about the Black community issue, about the inability, it seems, to band together. And so I had this discussion with someone on my podcast a couple of days ago, and his perspective was that we don't band together because we have a lack of trust. And it's not necessarily that we have a lack of trust in one another. It's we have a lack of trust in that person being there. And I asked him why he thought that. And he said, well, if you look about, you know, since our time here in this country, we have been trying to get close together, build families, and we have been constantly ripped away from one another. So that's our dynamic within the past couple, a few centuries. And it's just something that we have to get over. And the same might be with regards to women. Maybe that we are just so ingrained in the belief that we need to give ourselves to other people such as men and children, that we don't give to ourselves as a community of women. So I'm not necessarily, I'm still chewing on those perspectives, but I thought that I would lend them to the conversation.
No, I think those are some good points. I mean, yes, for centuries we've been kind of, you know, separated and, you know, been the backbone, the mothers and,
yes,
you know, the wives and that whole support system where we probably have not been able to ever focus on ourselves. And so mm-hmm. I think that when you've been conditioned that long to not think of yourself, that when you do try to focus on your dreams and stuff, you're just like, okay, I got to focus on me. It's going to be all about me, as opposed to, that's okay to focus on you, but others can help you to get there a little faster too, if we all band together. So I think
it's interesting too, because in the building the rise, it's been hit or miss with building teams. Sometimes I have great teams and then they just fall out. And I don't understand it, because everyone I know seems to have some sort of gift or talent, but it's like we go off on our own and we do it on our own. And even me, sometimes I go, well, it'll be just better if I just do it myself. So I don't know how to overcome that psyche.
No, I think it's a process.
Yeah.
It's definitely a process. you know, it's a process. And then just the last thing I want to touch on, I know that we've talked about this too, just besides racism and things like that, you know, within our own community, meaning the Black community, African American community, I know that we still have issues with, you know, our own skin color.
Oh, you know, that's a touchy subject for me.
I know, light versus dark, and you're just like, what the heck is going on here? Aren't we the same people?
Right.
But can you just kind of just tell us how you've some of the experiences you've encountered with that and how it's made you feel?
Oh boy. Yeah. I had a discussion with one of my white allies, he likes to call himself, on a podcast. And he asked me what my experience is in terms of being a Black woman in America and as it relates to racism. And I had to be honest with him, and I say, I'm a part of the Black community, so I'm well aware of what we are going through. I'm not alienating myself from that experience, but what I am saying is that I personally have not experienced a form of racism until potentially this year, but that's not the point.
Right.
My issue with feeling alienated, less than, oppressed, and all of that kind of stuff, and judged and criticized as a result of my skin color, has been with my own people. And that is basically because I am of a lighter hue. There are certain assumptions that are made in respect to the privileges that I'm warranted, which that might be true, but I personally don't pursue those privileges. You know, me being extremely pro African American Black in terms of culture and ethnicity, I found that the majority of my life, because of the criticisms and the judgments and the assumptions that were made as a result of my color skin, made by my own people, I had a very limited lived experience. I could not live freely and fully in my passion, in my love for Black culture. And I felt, you know, people in my own community really criticized the way that I speak, the way that I carry myself. I was often called white girl.
Because you speak proper English.
Because I speak the way the English language is supposed to be spoken.
Right.
And because I don't do quote unquote Black things, I don't quote unquote live in the hood, you know, and I've been told that because I was raised in Pasadena, California, like because my father worked hard to raise us in middle class, you know, neighborhoods, I've been told that I'm not Black because of that, because I didn't grow up in Compton or Crenshaw or Inglewood, you know.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, in terms of culture, like, I'm as Black as they come, right? But But yeah, that's been my experience, and it's very sad, very disheartening. And that probably contributed a lot to the depression that I went through also, because I wanted to be me. The way that I'm living myself now is who I wanted to be all my life. And it took me to my mid-40s to be okay enough to do that.
Wow. Very powerful. Well, Najee, I would say that you are a conqueror. You have...
Oh, really?
Yes, you would? You have conquered, you know, depression. You've conquered what that depression was trying to lead you to, which was, you know, you felt suicidal. You have conquered obstacles that have gotten your way, whether that has been, you know, other women or just different experiences, you know, throughout life that have tried to prohibit you from achieving your dreams. You are a conqueror because you are pursuing your dream, and you're constantly trying to make improvements and to find out, you know, to find what works for you and for your company, The Rise. You are a conqueror because you are an awesome artist, a conqueror because you're an author, but you're also just, you're a conqueror and something that other women should, you know, look to see that regardless of what you are feeling, what you may be experiencing, even if you're feeling like you're at the end, if they look at you and your story and see how you achieved, that they know that they can conquer anything. You know, it may be in baby steps. So I think that you should think of yourself as a conqueror.
I appreciate that. And it's, I think that's the reason why you and I are aligned, because we have those types of conversations and we give those types of reminders to ourselves. So I appreciate the reminder. Thank you.
You are so welcome. And I do appreciate you being a part of my podcast today. You are one of the reasons that I started a podcast. And plus two, I must admit, it is becoming like therapy for me. One of my aspirations is to do public speaking. I am hiding behind the mic right now, I guess, with the podcast.
For now.
But I'm gonna get there.
You actually, I don't like this phrase, but I mean in terms of speaking and enunciating for the microphone, not because as a Black person. But you actually do very well. Speak very, very well. Very clear, very concise. So you will do well on your podcast and your endeavor as a speaker. I assure you.
Well, thank you so much. And for those that are listening, don't forget to purchase Let Go of Your Butt, which is a guide, a woman's guide to self-love and fulfillment. You can find that on The Rise, and that's RHYZE.com.
And it's TheRise.com.
TheRise.com. So TheRHYZE.com. And you can also find it on Amazon.com. So we're all familiar with Amazon, but... So you can purchase it in those two places. And we want to thank Najee for being open and vulnerable so that others that are listening can benefit from this message, and hopefully will uplift your life. I'm just going to leave with a quote that was from Najee's book. I think it was part of the dedication to her friend, which I liked, which it says, "Even during dark times, it was you who held on to me and promised a better way toward the light." Again, even during dark times, it was you who held on to me and promised a better way toward the light. Thank you for listening. And remember, always head towards the light.
Thank you for listening to the Canvas of the Soul podcast. You can contact us at info@canvasthesoul.com. You may learn more about our podcast at canvasthesoul.com.